Today's guest is Moshe Amzel, and he's a different guest than I normally have because, number one, he's a man, and number two, he has a background that is a little bit different in who he helps as a business owner. He has a podcast called Profit with Law, and he also holds a summit, Law Firm Growth. So like I said, he's not the typical guest I normally have, but his story is so powerful and I couldn't stop talking to him. We go over an hour. So if you want something short, I'm sorry, you'll have to maybe listen to this in two parts or set aside some time that you have. But he helps law firm owners grow their practice with a focus on creating general wealth. And what I loved hearing was his whole backstory from the time he was a teenager all the way up to present moment. And he is somebody who I would say is super resilient and determined. And he, no matter what challenges he faced, and no matter where he was emotionally and mentally, he always figured a way out and came out better for it. So he really learned lessons and applied the lessons he learned. And he struggled for, he had a failed marriage, three children from that marriage, and then found his true love and remarried and had three more kids. So he has six kids. He's a great dad, so much so that he had an accident playing on the slip and slide. So a great dad, but he has 20 years in the IT industry as a business executive, and he has extensive experience in sales and marketing, having closed over $30 million in sales in a single year. So in addition to Profit with Law, he also owns an accounting practice, Dream Builder Financial, where he helps clients with business advisory and tax strategy services. So as a college dropout, he eventually got his master's, but it's a fascinating story. And I love him so much. He is in a business mastermind that I'm in, but I really didn't know his full backstory until this interview. And I think you'll love it as much as I did. So enjoy, and let's get to it now. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And with me today, I have Moshe Amzel. And Moshe is a friend of mine. So I'm very excited to have him here because we met through business. We have the same coach. And I've known him for going on 4 years. I've met you like 4 years ago at our first, well, it was January, coming up in January. But yeah, so I'm excited because he is, first of all, a guy. I don't usually have guys on the show, but he has such a great story of going after what he wanted in life. And it wasn't necessarily what he started with. And he did a big pivot midlife. And that included having a new wife and having new kids, and he has like six total. So he'll talk about that story, but he has a really great story and he's such an amazing human being. And so I wanted to have him on. So welcome, Moshe.
Thank you so much, Laurie. It's my pleasure to be here. And I really appreciate you, all the kind words that you said about me. I'll try to live up to that, to that intro.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we're going to see each other again next week. So I'm excited about that. But we for 2 years, we were relegated to virtual meetings. So
Yeah,
we
I'm
could.
looking forward to in-person connections again. Unfortunately, I broke my foot in August and underwent surgery and got 20 screws put in. So I will like just be exiting wearing a boot when we go on that trip. So I will probably be walking with some walking aid, maybe a cane or still a crutch. I don't know. I have no idea what I'll be up to, but it'll be interesting.
Well, let's start there because that's a great story. So Moshe wanted to be with his kids. He wanted to have a better life, and he didn't want to be this workaholic person, which I think that you, because I was like that in my life. And so I have that tendency as well. But he was doing a slip and slide with his kids and then had to get taken by ambulance and then had to have surgery. So quite the story. But he was just doing his dad thing, which is what his dream has been. So why don't you start about like where were you in life when you realized this is not what I want?
Well, you know, at every stage of life, you think that what you're doing is what you want. I don't think anybody purposely sets out to do something they don't want to do. And I was no different. I knew better than my parents. I knew better than the people around me. And at 19 years old, got married. And at 19 years old, became a dad. And my oldest daughter is now 23. I'm 43, and I've got quite a bit that I've done in my life since I started so early and got busy so early. Having kids at a very young age created this responsibility that was kind of, it was great because it really motivated me, but it was also a noose around my neck to prevent me from following any sort of purpose or passion that I might have because I had to provide for my family first and foremost. And it always felt like, well, starting my own business, going out on my own, doing my own thing would take away from that or would be a detractor from that responsibility. So even if I had dreams along the way, I kind of had to put them aside and say, okay, yeah, but this is working. This is providing. And I started straight out of high school. So I enrolled in one semester in college and I did like distance learning and I barely cracked the textbook. It really wasn't the right time for me. I wasn't motivated. I didn't have the motivation behind me. And actually, my first career was in IT. I was in IT for 20 years. And it all started because my mother knew I was good with computers and I was hanging out with friends till 3 in the morning, clubbing in New York City and sleeping till 1 in the afternoon. And she didn't really want that for her son. So she went to a local computer store and met with the owner and said, "Hey, my son's really good with computers. Would you take him on as an apprentice?" And he said, "Well, I'm willing to meet him." So she set up this interview for me and I went to meet him and he said, "If we show you the ropes when you start to go out to clients and we can bill you for your time out there and you're not needing to shadow somebody else, we can start paying you." And 3 weeks later, I started getting my first, I would say paycheck, but it was cash. I was getting paid $200 cash for the week. And it wasn't long in that role when I was out at a client. And the way that he operated was you'd do the work at the client and you call him before you leave and tell him what you did, how long you were there for. And he had me handwrite this bill for the client. And I was there for an hour and he had me bill them $90 for my time for 1 hour. And I was getting $200 for the week. So, of course, I came back and I sat, told him I had to talk to him and I sat down with him and I said, "Look, I really appreciate you, teaching me and getting me, out there, but I'm worth a lot more than $200 a week. I would like a raise." And he was leaving on vacation. He's like, "Oh, when I come back, I'll check and, I'll check my finances and see what I can do for you." He went to Israel for 2 weeks with his family. And the entire time he was gone, we held down the fort for him. It was me and another employee. I was out there hustling for him, thinking he's going to come back and I'm going to get a raise. He came back and he said, "Well, I thought about it and I really can't afford to give you a raise at this time." So, needless to say, I came home and told my mother I'm looking for a job. So she she's a saint.
And this is
She
before you
went
got
and
married, I guess, right? This is.
I was already I think I might have been married or not been. I'm not sure. No, I don't think I was married yet. at the time that this happened. So she got me an interview with the company that was supporting her office, a much larger computer environment. Their office was in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Most of their clientele they were serving were in Manhattan. And I went in for an interview there, aced the interview, got the job. They were hiring me to replace somebody else there who was still there. And I don't recall the exact numbers, but it was something like a salary of $21,000 or $23,000 a year. And I mean, to a kid straight out of high school who'd never worked a job before, to go from, to $200 a week and then a 20 something thousand dollar salary, I felt like I had hit the lotto. Of course, it's not a lot of money and it doesn't get you very far. But shortly after I started working there, I got married, and all of a sudden I had the responsibility of paying my own rent and, paying. I always was paying for my car, but paying for insurance, and there was other, all those things that come with it. And then, of course, we got pregnant right away, so now I know a baby's coming too. So I sat down with my boss and I said, "What can I do to earn a raise here? I know I've got this big life change coming. And I need to do something." And he said, "Well, we're back then the big network software that was in use in most of the businesses was Novell NetWare, and now
My
and
college roommate worked for them.
so Novell is like nobody knows today what Novell is, but back then that was the network operating system in most businesses, and Microsoft was trying to get a foothold into the business networking environment, and came out with a version of Windows called Windows NT. And with that version that they came out with, they also came out with a professional certification called a Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, an MCSE. And if you MCSEs were rare at the time because it was fairly new, and if you got an MCSE, you were immediately in the marketplace worth somewhere between 50 and 70,000. So he told me, he said, "Well, we're a Novell shop. We want to add supporting Windows, environments to it. Go get yourself the MCSE, and then we'll give you a raise." So I went and I purchased the components to build two computers. That's what we did back then because a brand new computer was a few thousand dollars. I built myself two computers, a server and a workstation, and I started studying. And it was a matter of months, probably about 6 months it took me. It was six exams. And I went through all the exams and I got my MCSE.
Now, did the
And
companies
that's,
pay for that, or did you do it on your own?
I did it completely on my own. I had to pay for the actual exam with Microsoft. It was like $100-something for the ex for each exam. And I bought put books, probably 30, 40 bucks for the books, for each exam. And it
A
was
lot
just a
cheaper than
matter
a
of,
college tuition.
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I paid the piper for college later, but,
Yeah.
no, I earned, I got quite a ways into a career without a college education. And it just goes to show that you really could do anything if you want to. It doesn't, you don't have to follow a specific path. And my path is certainly not the mainstream path in any of the steps that I've taken. But they definitely got me there. The other thing that's interesting is that I would never have been motivated to push myself through these six exams if I didn't need it. So it's almost like these situations I've created for myself throughout life of creating a necessity in order to meet a demand is kind of how I've grown as a person and professionally, throughout life. At this point, I was not even 20. Like my daughter hadn't been born yet. By the time she was born, I was an MCSE. So, and then I was going in for a raise, and of course, I was in for another disappointment because I went in for a raise and I was given a very nice raise for somebody who was earning 21 or 23,000. I think it raised me to 28 or 29. But I knew at that point, I already knew what MCSEs were getting paid in the marketplace. And it wasn't long before I found myself a job for some software company, making about 55. Now this is getting close to Y2K and the dot-com bubble that burst afterwards. It's right around that time. My daughter was born in 99. I probably started in 99 working for the software company. No, I take that back. I started working for them in 2000 because I went through Y2K at that job in Fort Lee. I remember, I mean, we were going to clients and like updating the system clocks and their
Oh
computers to
yeah.
be able
I
to
worked at
carry
AOL,
over
so it was a big
to the
we
new
had
year.
lots of projects, the Y2K projects. Yes. Yeah, I have a question for you
I
about how that your experience has made a difference for how you advise your oldest children on their path. Do you
It's
like you must
very.
be less like worried about them going to college than somebody might. I mean, some I think parents who didn't go to college want that for their kids, but it sounds like you're fine with the whatever path they feel they need to follow.
I've encouraged, well, so I have three grown daughters. They're 23, 21, and 20. And I've encouraged all three of them to get a college degree. My oldest was in college. She also works for me, she's a rock star. She was in college. She wants to be an editor. She wants to be a book editor. And she right now runs our podcast. So I have a podcast called Profit with Law. Any lawyers listening to this, go tune into Profit with
Or
Law, but
spouses of lawyers,
probably not.
tell your
Spouse
husbands
or
or
children, right?
wives, yes.
Your children are
Yeah, your
attorneys
children,
and
yes.
running their own law firm. It's a great podcast. But
And he's doing a
she's
summit
the
soon, so we'll make sure to get the link for the summit in the show
Yeah, the
notes.
Law Firm Growth Summit can be found at lawfirmgrowthsummit.com. If you're listening to this and the registration page is not up yet, there's always a wait list page there. Just put in name and email address. It's a 3-day virtual event. Excited about that too. We can, if we have time, we can talk about creating that because it's another one of those things where you're just not going mainstream and doing something different. But as far as answering your question regarding college, so my oldest was enrolled in school, but she found it to be too stressful to take on a full-time student workload. She wanted to be working during while going through school. She's been employed by me the entire time, except for her first year and a half where she was studying abroad in Israel.
Well, that's a great idea. I mean, it's better than me. Like, I was a bartender pushing draft beer across the, that's hers. She's ma making better use of her time.
Yeah, so all three of my girls spent a year and a half. Two of them a year and a half, one a year, studying abroad in Israel. That's how they started. They're religious Orthodox Jews. I in my divorce, gave up being Orthodox. I still identify as Jewish, and but live more of a reform, conservative lifestyle. For any Jews listening to the podcast, they know those terms. A lot of other people don't. But think of what you would term Hasidic is probably the broad term that you give to anybody who lives an Orthodox lifestyle. That's my older girls. Like they won't wear anything with sleeves that go above the elbows. When they get married, they'll cover their hair, stuff like that. But they're Sabbath observant. They keep kosher. So that's the lifestyle that they've chosen. And it all their study all starts with a year abroad in Israel. So my oldest, she was about halfway through her bachelor's, and she decided that it was just too much, and she didn't think she needed a college degree to get to where she wants to go, and she put it on hold or stopped it completely. It's up in the air. I mean, she can always go back. But I told her that I support whatever it is that she does. I think it would be a waste to waste the amount of time that she spent in school to not actually get the degree and have it. But at the same time, I don't think she needs it. I think it's great to have, but I don't think it's a requirement. My second is she's a teacher now, and she wants to grow that career as a teacher. She's going to need a college degree for that. So she's almost finished her bachelor's. She'll be done shortly. She's enrolled in Touro College out of New York, but she's been studying abroad. She actually lives in Houston, Texas, and is teaching there. And then the third one, she was taking a there's a cheating path to a bachelor's is what I like to call it. But basically, there's some colleges that allow you to test out of various classes, and you can get credits for it. So she was essentially testing out of all these classes on her way to earning her bachelor's when she got a job in real estate. So she's an executive assistant for a real estate company. And the owner, she works directly for the owner, and the owner basically convinced her, and it's not a problem at all, that there's a bright future for her in real estate if she likes it. So she's now studying to get her license to be able to show properties. And she's all in on real estate as her career right now. Definitely does not need a degree for that. So I've
Yeah,
encouraged
it's
her when
fun. Oh, they're
she's
all
done.
starting out.
Yeah, I have
Yeah.
encouraged her when she's done to go back and finish this. Like, just take some more exams and get yourself, the bachelor's, have it so that you never know where life's going to take you. One of the things that I have in my back pocket is I'm a paramedic. And whenever
But you
something
couldn't fix
comes
your own
up that,
ankle.
what's that?
You had to be the patient. I said you couldn't help yourself when you broke your ankle.
Right. Well, I helped myself enough to know that broke my foot and I
That's
needed to
true.
elevate it and not
Yeah.
move it. No, but in all seriousness, like, there's been phases of my life where that was instrumental. Like right now, we wanted to keep Jamie home for a year after Derek was born. And the only way I could do that is if I had health insurance from somewhere. And to pay for health insurance out of pocket would have been too much to not have her income. And to, and to rely completely on my business to support our family and also have an extra, $3,000, $4,000 a month expense for a family, decent family plan, just would have been out of the question. So I picked up two more. I always work one shift a week there. I picked up two more shifts on the medic truck and I went full time and I get benefits. And I can do that for as long or as short as I want. And then I can step away. Now I broke my foot and I was able to go on paid family leave for my son's birth and then disability. And, so
Yeah.
it's something that I have, as a backup where it's always there if I ever need extra money for whatever reason. So I encourage my kids to always leave their options open. Like, just don't think that whatever you're embarking on right now is the be all and end all, and there's nothing else that's going to come up. Life has its way of throwing things at us, and you never know what it's going to be. So you don't close doors in the process of opening new ones is really, the message that I want them to get from me. So I, yeah, I, I'm their biggest cheerleader and biggest fan, regardless of what they do.
That's awesome.
It's yeah.
Yeah. So now you are, a young dad, you're working your way up through using your computer skills. So at some point you realized that you're not happy, skipping like to your midlife. Well,
Yeah,
we're
so I ended up leaving the software company and starting an IT division for another local business. In that process, through that journey, it was a 6-year stint that I was there. And during that process, I did a lot of travel. We ended up moving from a local clientele to a nationwide clientele, and I mean, it was so insane that there were some days that I was in four cities in one day. I would literally fly in. First thing in the morning for a meeting, fly out to another meeting in another city, and then fly from there to a third one, and then fly to the fourth one for my next,
for like a
my next
dinner meeting.
morning.
Yeah.
It was insane, and I was doing it all in the name of my family and all of that, but spending a lot of time away from home in that process, and I regret those days. I enjoyed it. Like, their travel can be enjoyable. You can, like, for the right person, it's something that you can really get into. But it wasn't even like I was in a place long enough to appreciate the place. And the entire time it was taking me away from my kids. And it was towards the end of this process that my ex-wife and I got divorced. And going through the divorce is one thing, and it's a whole rabbit hole we can go down. Probably spend a whole episode talking about that. But once the divorce was behind me, there were a few things that happened. I lost my motivation to succeed in my career. My money. So the kids were in private school because of the Jewish upbringing that they were receiving, and I was earning a nice six-figure income, and my ex was getting 30 something percent of it. And so between my child support and paying private school tuition, the lion's share of my income was going to my ex and their school. And I really had nothing to show for it at the end of the day with the work I was doing, which of course will deflate you no matter how motivated you are. So I really lost my motivation to succeed where I was, and the company was also running into hard times. My boss had fallen behind in payroll, you know, so I was owed money by him. And at the same time, when I went through my divorce, I decided that that was a good time to put myself in paramedic school. So paramedic school is a 2,000 plus hour program of classes and rotations where you're riding on an ambulance, you're in the hospital ER, you're in the OR, you're in on the LND floor, labor and delivery floor. So what I was doing is I was working during the day, and then I would go into Manhattan for my class from 7 to 11 at night. And then twice a week, I would stay overnight from 11 to 7 for my rotation. So I was.
So I have a question about that. Is so different than computer work. So it just have to ask, what prompted you to want to do something that is so different? And to me, you know, I have a hard time like looking at stuff because I faint. So, yeah. So I don't think I could do it, but yeah. So it's really helping people and being a service to people type of job. Not that the computer skills isn't, but very different.
No, and that's exactly, I mean, when we started this conversation, you know, I said that, you know, sometimes you do things not because you purposely did it, right? And not because it was a wrong thing or a bad thing at the time, but it wasn't necessarily the thing that you know you want to do or that you want to do, you know, like that's your purpose in this world. When I was 18, or shortly before I turned 18, a friend of mine in school had an EMT book. He was studying for the EMT exam, and I saw the book and I asked him, you know, questions about it, and I was genuinely intrigued. And he invited me to come to the ambulance corps and check it out. And I became a volunteer at the ambulance corps and took the EMT class and got my EMT certification right after my 18th birthday. So I started this in 1997. And becoming a paramedic was the next step from an EMT. So it's something that I was doing already, but it's also something that's way more aligned with my purpose than the IT career. It's almost like the IT career was a complete detour in the process. It was a great use of my skills, my brain. I was very good at it. I made a career out of it, but it wasn't something that lit me up. What lit me up was helping people. And when I was helping people in my IT career, I was also satisfied. But when I ended up working at 3 o'clock in the morning to get somebody's server resurrected because some hacker had, you know, taken a hold of it for ransom, I didn't feel like I was helping people anymore. And it was post-divorce. So basically what happened was I lost or left my IT job and decided to go full-time as a paramedic for a while and just take a breather from everything. And when I was working full-time as a medic, I had a lot of downtime. So there's a lot of times that we're running our butts off, but there are times that we're sitting with our feet up waiting for a call to drop. And during that time, the people around me were just consuming TV. Like that was what they did. And that wasn't me. Like I was always motivated. I wanted to do the next thing. And it was during that time that I started to really reflect on myself as a person and what I wanted and what I wanted to be known for, what was the impact I wanted to have long term, what was my legacy. And it was during that time that I realized what I wanted to do was to impact other people with being able to do what my grandfather did for me. And I'm gonna keep his story really short because there's so much to cover. But essentially, my grandfather left Nazi Germany when he was 11 years old with his father. His father was well connected with the import-export trade because he was an orange merchant. So he was involved in import and export of oranges. And because of that, he knew the Italian government agents, and he was able to secure visas for his family. A lot of people weren't that lucky. So he got visas for his family, and they actually had a place on a boat leaving Italy to go to Israel to get out of Germany. And his sister, so he had twin siblings, and his sister contracted pneumonia right before they left and had to be hospitalized. So his mother and his twin siblings stayed to get the next boat when they left the hospital. They never got out. They ended up dying in Auschwitz. But my grandfather and his father left, and so he grew up with just his father and no siblings, no mother. And his father was, was a businessman and had turned whatever money he had into diamonds and had sent it to family in New York. And ultimately ended up in New York City in Washington Heights and started a diamond trade business from the diamonds that he had sent ahead of himself. And then my grandfather stepped into the role with his father, worked in his business and eventually had his own business, being a diamond merchant. At some point in this process, he and four of his cousins got together. They had some extra money. They were doing well. And they bought a building on the west side of Manhattan. And that building, they rented out for years, and whatever money they made from it or whatever, whatever it was, in the later years of his life, he started to sell off the units in that building at, to individual owners. So turned it into a co-op. And the money from those units, he then started to distribute to his grandchildren as the down payment for their first home purchase. So I received the down payment for my first home purchase from my grandfather. And I actually received it twice, because not because I bought two homes or went through life twice, which is actually how it ended up happening, but because the first time that he did it, it was a smaller contribution than the second time. So by the time that I bought my second home, the first time I bought a home, I was 21. And I was only able to do that because I received this gift from my grandparents. My grandmother was not alive anymore, but it was essentially from the two of them. But it was really my grandfather's, business dealings that had created the opportunity for that. And what a difference it made for his grandchildren just starting out in life to be able to acquire their first piece of real estate when they would have had to wait years to save that much and amass that much.
I
And that
love how he
really
made it
motivated.
conti you know, like it had to be for that too, because sometimes you don't necessarily as a 21-year-old. I know that my grandparents gave each of their grandchildren a trip abroad as a graduation present from high school. And I said, no, grandma and grandpa, like being a nice kid is like, oh, thank you. Oh, I said, can I have money instead? And they said no. And it was the best trip I ever went on as an 18-year-old. And so, yeah, I think it's great that was the condition, as it has to be on your first home, your down
Yeah, so
payment.
that was part of their legacy that they wanted to leave, was they wanted you to have that experience and know that you experienced it because of them. And that was, that was what he wanted for us, was to really change our generation to experience it, and also made us givers, right? Like, if when you're the recipient of a gift like that, it makes you more willing to part with your own money down the road and give to somebody else.
And probably also makes you realize the value in real estate. If you own a piece of real estate and you see it appreciate,
Right.
which I don't know when you did it, but it was 2007, or maybe not. But yeah.
I bought my first home in 2001. I bought my first home in 2001. I sold it when we got divorced. So we sold it in 2006. I mean, I looked like a genius selling
Great
it
time
then,
to sell
right?
it. Yeah.
And then I bought my next home in 2013, my ne and then the next one after that in 2006, 2016, which is the home we're in now. And I can't wait to get the next one because we're busting out at the seams of this one. So,
So what happened to, so you were curious, you wanted to create this legacy. When did Jamie come along? It sounds to me like you started to get your head in a good place. Like you said, you weren't motivated as you were going through your divorce, but then you started to look and be curious. You kind of, it sounds like you got more looking for opportunity versus sitting as a victim. So, and that, you and I both
Right.
know that
So,
when you're in that mind space, you're not going to attract anything when you're
yeah,
feeling
some
like
of the
that.
stuff I did right away, like joining signing up for the paramedic program and going through that, I did right away on my own. And it was to avoid victim mentality. Like, I knew that if I didn't do that, then every night that I don't have my kids, I'd be going out with friends to the bar. And, I just didn't see a good version of myself in that version of the story. So I decided to do something that, although it would be very difficult, would also keep me very busy. And it was almost like a distraction to the reality of going through whatever I was going through. I had a lot of time to unpack it, in those next few years, but it really wasn't a long time before I met Jamie. So, we split up, got separated in 05. 06 was the legal separation, and then I met Jamie in 08. So I had
That's
a
funny.
couple of
I got
years.
I separated in 2006 too. So same year we
Yeah,
were going
there
through
we
the same.
go. We're like besties,
Sheesh.
separation
Yeah.
besties. So yeah, no, I meet what's interesting is that I never lacked motivation. I had my kids the whole time, right? And I've always been the best version of dad that I knew how to be at every stage of life. I do regret the time that I spent away from them, but whenever I was with them, I always made the best of it. So it's not like I feel like I failed as a father in those years, but I knew that I could do better and I could be a better dad if I valued that time with them more. And meeting Jamie was something that was a new motivator for me, right? Like I could see a life with her, and it took a long time because I mean she was straight out of college and I was a divorced guy with three kids. Like there was incompatibility for all over the place. As a matter of fact, when I first just talked to her parents about marrying her mother was like, "You have more baggage than an L-all terminal," was her response to me. Like, you don't need to be marrying my daughter.
That's
Now they
funny.
adore me, but
Yeah.
it took a long time for me to grow on them, for me to grow on her, and for her to see the true version of me, right? Like in all genuine, the giving person that I am, the loving person that I am. So that was a long process, but once I was in a serious relationship, it really changed the dynamic of what I was doing. Like it wasn't, oh, I'm gonna, for the rest of my life, I'm gonna work for child support. And it was more like, okay, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to be known for? And how do I then turn that into something that I can make create my own destiny with? The first thing was eliminating this limiting belief of what my max earning potential was. Because up until then, I had earned, 130,000 a year, 140,000 a year, and it wasn't like at that point that was the most that I can conceive, earning. And I had to start thinking of it in a different way. And that's when I really started thinking about, okay, what if I started my own business? What if I had c complete control over, over my income? At the same time, I decided that I wanted to fill in some blanks in my education. So I had been exposed in business to, I was a manager. I had run my own department. I had hired people. I had fired them. I had made sales. I had met with clients. Like there was a lot of business that I had experience with, but I had no experience with the financial side of business. I was never involved in the accounting. I was never involved in the profit and loss. And the real decisions that had to be made to make the company successful or not successful. So I was down a few rungs down the ladder too far and I felt like there was a missing piece of the puzzle. So I decided to go for my bachelor's, and in the process, signed up for a slew of accounting and business courses, business law. And really, the accounting classes, I started to eat those up. I took accounting one, accounting two, and then intermediate accounting one and two, and then advanced accounting one and two, and cost accounting. And soon I realized that, maybe being a CPA was in my, was the next step. And I finished my bachelor's degree in accounting. I ended up going for an MBA with a program that had a CPA track. So basically, part of the MBA program was studying for and taking your CPA exams, which I took, and I passed all four of the exams, and I got my MBA. So all of that, my kids got to watch me as an adult learner, which I think was huge. My wife was very much involved. I mean, during that time I got married. I was like it was a long process. It was 6 or 7 years it took to get 2 degrees as an adult learner, but I was always working. At times I was working 2 full-time jobs. So when I went back to IT during this process because I got married and now I needed an income. More than what paramedic was a joke, right? I mean, they paramedics at that time were starting at $16 an hour. I wasn't even covering my child support with my paramedic salary. So it wasn't it was something I loved doing, but it was not something that was going to carry me through. So I went back into IT. I became a project manager. Nice salary there, and then I was still working full time as a paramedic, just 3 nights a week. But in 2013, my world changed once again, and we discovered that my ex-wife had become an alcoholic, and my kids were being exposed to tremendous neglect and abuse when they were with her. And there was so many warning signs leading up to it that, I still kick myself for not having picked up on it. I would get them on Wednesdays and I would pick them up from school, and without fail, there was always one of them that was sick. So my routine was pick them up from school on Wednesday, take them to the doctor's office for a doctor's visit, and then go home and make them dinner and do their homework with them. Like, that was without fail every week. That was what we were doing. The youngest of the three, my now 20-year-old, we thought that there was something so terribly wrong with her because she got strep throat all the time. The doctor at one point sat down with me and said, "Look, she had strep 7 times in a 12-month period. So we should really look at maybe removing her tonsils. Like, there's, something is wrong here." And it was around that time that we discovered that my ex was an alcoholic. And one story to highlight, like, how they were living at that time, because she would basically be leaving them at home and going out at night. So there was one night that the three of them were up waiting for her to come home, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And they were beside themselves, like, where is she? And they always had strict instructions by her not to call me. Like, there was, she had done a good job of keeping it from me. They called her to see where she was. Now, mind you, at the time, if I had to guess their ages, it was 9, 7, and 6 at the
Yeah.
time.
Oh my gosh.
So here's a 6-year-old up at 3 o'clock in the morning, hasn't gone to sleep yet
And a
because
9-year-old
mommy's
who
not home,
shouldn't really
right?
be responsible for
And a
younger
9-year-old
siblings and
who's
not even seeing
babysitting,
their son. Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So they call, and a taxi cab driver answers the phone and says, "Whoever's phone this is left it in the taxi." So they have no way to reach her. They don't know where she is, and the only person they can reach is a taxi cab driver. And that's the kind of thing that they were going through on a daily basis. So I was able to get custody of them temporarily right away, and then we went for permanent custody. She didn't even show up to the hearing. She was so far off the deep end at that point. So they moved in with us full time, and I immediately started to get into, saving them mode, right? How do I support them in the best way? So we learned very quickly about Alateen, which is Al-Anon is the support groups for people who have family who are alcoholics. Alateen is the children's version of Al-Anon. So it's basically children who are exposed to alcoholism get to meet and get supported and talk with each other and hear each other's stories and get support in that way. Now, my kids were very particular, and my oldest it wasn't comfortable sharing some of her stuff in front of her sisters, so she needed her own meeting. And we also got them therapists, and we only wanted the best for them. Needless to say, the therapists were out of network, right? The good therapists that are they never take insurance. It's the therapists who are just getting started that accept your insurance policy.
Now, was all this going on before you had kids with Jamie?
Yeah,
Wow.
so Tyler
Well,
was
good
born
for
in, my
Jamie,
oldest with
though. I'm
Jamie
sure
was
she
born in
was.
2015, and this started in 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a lot because we bought a house together in July of 2013, and a week after we closed is when we found out. It was like it was almost immediate. Like, we bought the house with the planning on the kids being there, once a week, every other weekend, and then they moved in,
Yeah, well,
and they
they're
were
very
moving out.
lucky to have a father that cares so much and a stepmother that is willing to take them on, because that can be tough.
Yeah, it was definitely a trying time. It was a rough journey. It got, I mean, it quickly got to the point where at some point Jamie sat down with me and she was like, "Look, I know that we could use the money, but I can't be a full-time mom to them 3 nights a week, right? I need you there." So I had to give up the paramedic truck, and not do that. But at the same time, I wasn't paying child support anymore. Right, so it was it you know there was give and take. The truth is legal fees and supporting the kids was more expensive than child support. But we got through that. Like there was an end to that at some point. But it so it, during this period of being there for the kids and really needing to take them to all these appointments, always get them to and from school, and we were able to get them busing. But the first year, that was very difficult. When they had appointments after school to go to their different things, I couldn't wait for the bus to come. It took the bus an hour. So I would pick them up from school. So I needed to, I was basically leaving my job at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was, there were times I was coming in exhausted. I was, and it really started to get to this point where I felt the urgency of needing to have my own thing, be my own boss, to, create my own destiny. And it was always the plan. It kind of accelerated that, the need and the necessity for that. And I started in 2014, I started an accounting business on the side. I also couldn't get a job as an entry level accountant, which was crazy because I was so qualified and I was like, I was the world's best kept secret. And all these accounting firms were looking for somebody with no experience who had never worked before that they could drive 60 to 80 hours a week and that they can, mold into whatever version that they wanted an accountant to be, that I couldn't get interviews. I went to all kinds of networking things. Initially I tried to switch careers to become an accountant, but I couldn't get a job. So I started my own accounting business, and I first started with the wrong industry. I first focused on online businesses, coaches, course creators, things like that. What I soon came to find out is that there's two types of online business owners, those that have not made it and those that have. It's a very interesting phenomenon, but in that business, once you figure it out, you're successful overnight. So you might be building it for 10 years, but then you figure it out, and then all of a sudden you're making millions. And what happened was, is it, if somebody's in the have not made success stage, they couldn't afford an accountant. Even if they thought they needed one, it was a very low quality client. And if somebody achieve this level of success where all of a sudden they've got, a million plus in revenue and multiple six figures of profit in a year, they're scrambling to figure out who's going to serve them. They're immediately going to family, friends, and other people in the industry, and getting referrals. So if I didn't get them at the exact moment that they were like on the meteoric rise, it was almost impossible to find a client that was worth having. So I focused on that industry for a short period of time, and in that process decided that I needed to differentiate myself from other accountants and had gotten turned on to Mike Michalowicz's Profit First, and ultimately became a Profit First professional. His book is behind me on the shelf here, for those of you who aren't familiar with it. But Mike is, his book is very instrumental in changing the formula for a lot of businesses because it's basically grandma's envelope system for personal finance with your business, right? And it takes the smarts that you need to understand your P&L and understand your balance sheet and eliminates that, throws it out the window. All you need to understand is I need five bank accounts and I'm only looking at one of them to figure out if I can afford to pay for something. So I became a Profit First professional and through my affiliation with them, got a lead for a law firm in Manhattan. And that law firm became my first law firm client. who soon referred another, who referred another. And that's really how I got started with the legal industry. In the process, I also pivoted, realizing, because my first five law firm clients, four out of the five had really successful looking businesses, beautiful office, staff, clients coming through the door. What they didn't have was money, which was really weird, but very, very cash tight businesses. And they were moving personal funds in to cover payroll and cover rent. And what I discovered is that a lot of these attorneys were really good at selling themselves as an attorney and getting a client, but they were really bad at the business side of things. They were really bad at understanding the business equation and recognizing that they were overspending, that they couldn't afford the things that they were spending money on, and also not charging enough. Like because their fees are based on, initially based on an hourly fee, it sounds like a lot. But the reality is it's not. You have a whole support system behind it that you're not billing for. You have all that overhead you're not billing for. So it sounds like you're charging somebody $300 an hour. It sounds crazy, but the reality is it's really not a lot when you're looking at the overall business. And helping them understand how to price their services differently so that it doesn't sound like a lot to the client, so that it really sets them up for profitable success, understand where they should or shouldn't be spending money, understand how to then grow it and scale it. That became something that became was obvious to me that there was a need for in the industry. And I started my coaching business, Profit with Law, which really started as a podcast in early 2019.
Yeah, this is so interesting. I did not know this whole backstory, and it's to me your versatility. It's almost like you're like the little Swiss Army knife of business of all the things you've done. It's so
Yeah, and
amazing.
that's why, I mean, that's why I feel like I can speak into it is because of all of that variety of experience that I have. Even on the paramedic truck, like there's so much that I learn from there that I apply to business. It comes up in my coaching calls. It comes up in, various things that I talk about publicly to get attention or to make waves. And it also so many people who are supporting law firms in the way that I do are other lawyers who achieved a level of success and now they're showing this is how I did it. I'm coming at it from a completely different angle. I'm coming at it from this is how you succeed at business. A law firm is just another business. Here's how you do that. And what's interesting is that I can serve law firms in a way that other people can't because I can look outside of the industry. I can look outside of the box and I can help them to rethink the things that they take for granted as, oh, I have to do it this way. And that's there's so much of that that I get where they think that they have to price their services a certain way. They think that they have to, take a retainer and invoice the client as they go, and they can only invoice them once a month. And so many of these things are things that I push back on and and tell them they can do differently. One of the best decisions I made in the growth of my business was to start the Law Firm Growth Summit. And that came from me questioning the industry. So there's the only way that lawyers get continuing education is in-person conferences. And all these conferences are about law. There's very little out there that you go to a conference and it's all about the growth of your business. And through my podcast, I started to connect with a lot of people who had a lot of very, very good things to share. And I decided that creating a conference that was entirely on the growth of a law firm, with nothing to do with the practice of law, and highlighting all these people and bringing them together in a virtual environment where people don't have to book a ticket, don't have to go out and go to a place in person, that would be massive and would create a bunch of opportunity for everybody to be able to expand what they know and to learn. And we did our first Law Firm Growth Summit in December of 2019. Little did we know that we were the jet setters for the next year when everything would go virtual.
Yeah. And I remember you going through that because, yeah. And the thing that I remember so much about you is that you're so determined to figure it out. It was kind of a new arena for you coming into this, like wanting to do this thing where you realized, oh, I want to help law firm owners specifically. And I remember when you started your podcast and Like, yeah, it's just been really amazing to watch you grow in this new thing, that confidence, because every new thing that you do, you're kind of like feeling your way at first. So I don't know if you know that my brother-in-law is a lawyer. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you've told me.
Okay. All right. So yeah.
Turn him
So
on to my podcast.
yeah, we
Well,
should
look,
have one.
I'm not for
He could tell
everybody,
you about
right?
his the whole woman that worked for him stealing almost $1 million from him.
Yeah, you
He
did
could
tell
tell
me
you
that.
that story.
You did tell me that. And
Yeah.
what's interesting is I should really have him on the podcast. I think it's a story
Like what not
that
to
you should
do.
talk about because
Yeah.
people can learn from that. What's crazy is that there's so many, and it's any business, right? But there's so many law firm owners that they just don't, they don't know, they don't understand the financials, and therefore they can't notice if something like that is happening. How do you not notice that $1 million
Yeah.
disappeared over a period of
Well,
time, right?
she had worked for him for
And
19 years, so
right,
he
it
trusted
was over
her
time.
instead
Right,
of,
it was over time. He trusted her, and but it comes from not paying attention or not having the right mechanisms in place to not have one person hold the keys, right? And that's something that you have to learn. It's something and unfortunately, there's so many people that just don't think that they need help, right? They just think, oh, I'm gonna go and figure it out on my own, do it myself. What I tell people is I help you do in 1 year what's gonna take most people 20 to do, right? Like it's not, I don't have any special secret sauce or secret that I'm gonna teach you that you can't figure out on your own. But when you go out and try to figure it out on your own, you're going to learn all the mistakes and it's going to be very costly. And each time that you learn a mistake, it's going to set you back 6 months because you're going to be afraid to do the next thing.
I
You have
don't I
somebody in
said
your corner helping you avoid those mistakes. It's really what creates that opportunity to grow from there.
So fast forward, we'll wrap up. I know this has gone a little bit longer, but it's been really great. So the one thing that I did want to touch on, because you're such a family guy, you're such a big teddy bear too, that you come, you're talking all this business stuff and all, you developed all these this expertise, but yet the bottom line is what matters to you is your family and the quality of time. Instead of the one thing that you said in when you filled out the form, was that you didn't want to spend your entire life preparing for the opportunity to live.
Yes, exactly. And
So many people
really,
do that. I mean, when did like how come you figured it out? Because you didn't have it before,
right.
and
Well, I think I went through a divorce in that process, right? Like not everybody gets a wake up call like that to be able to realize. But what I realized is that I was so as a young worker, I was so hell bent on preparing to retire at the age of 40 so I could live my life. Like I felt like the world was backwards, and everybody spends their entire young life working so that when they're in their 60s, they could go and buy a Maserati. Like it just didn't make sense to me. Like why am I going to wait until I'm in my 60s or 70s to go and drive a convertible around and to own a yacht? Like why can't I start with the yacht and the Maserati and then work when I'm 70 to pay for it? So that whole system I think is broken, and as a young person, I was trying to break that mold and grow it, amass as much wealth as possible so that I could have $3 million in the bank when I'm 40 and then I could retire. And in the process of doing that, I was ignoring everything that was right in front of me. And part of it was meeting Jamie. She's a very different personality than me. And from her, I learned that I wasn't, I wasn't paying enough attention to the here and now. But a lot of it I also learned on my own. When I started my business, I very purposely said, I'm never going to be doing this business in a way that everything has to be done by me. Like I need to figure out how to delegate early on. And I started, right? I mean, in 2017, I hired a virtual assistant who still works with me today. And now we have 7 or 8 employees right now. Let me think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 employees right now. And I have an outsourced sales team. All of our sales are done completely by this outsourced sales team. I bring in contractors when we have a major event like the Law Firm Growth Summit. I'm not trying to do things myself. We batch our podcast months in advance so that in the summer I can take 8 weeks off and work at my kids' day camp and be there with them every day. There's just a lot of things that I do along the way that I'm okay if we grow a little bit more slowly so that I have these opportunities.
Yeah.
And
It's almost like you want the time now. Like it's like you want to be retired now, like in a sense, you know, let
right.
have a have your work, but other people can do it. So you can kind of like in a sense not have to work as much. But because then you were in a really like now I don't have kids anymore. And so I now I need something to fill up my time. So you'll be there in a few years with your next set of kids when they get up there. But yeah, you're growing your next team.
That's right.
They're little,
Exactly.
but yeah,
Exactly.
so that's great. Well, thanks so much for being here. I really enjoyed the conversation, and you're so fascinating, your story. I don't know if you've ever thought about writing a book, but
It's on the list, right? There's
yeah,
only so much that we can do, and
that's right.
it's one of those things where, like, I think I can. There's a number of books that I want to write. There's the right time for it,
Yeah.
and it'll happen.
Yeah. Put that thing on your list as well. Another little tool from your Swiss Army knife.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Thanks, Moshe. See
All
you
right, thank you,
soon.
Lori. Thank you so much for having me. And share the wealth. If you enjoyed this episode, tell more people about this podcast. But if you know any attorneys, income
Yes.
owners, Profit with
Yes.
Law is
Yeah.
the
Like we
podcast.
said
And
earlier, if you have a son or a spouse, like if they
or a
want to.
daughter,
Or
lots of
yeah,
female attorneys.
son or daughter. Yeah, that was very like old-fashioned of me to think,
Yep.
you know, sorry
That's
about
what I'm
that.
here for.
Yeah, but yeah, they could be a really good guest on your podcast.
All right, Lori, take care.
All right, bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.
Today's guest is Moshe Amsel, and he's a different guest than I normally have because number one, he's a man, and number two, he has a background that is a little bit different in who he helps as a business owner. He has a podcast called Profit with Law, and he also holds a summit, Law Firm Growth. So, like I said, he's not the typical guest I normally have, but his story is so powerful, and I couldn't stop talking to him. We go over an hour. So, if you want something short, I'm sorry, you'll have to maybe listen to this in two parts or set aside some time that you have. But he helps law firm owners grow their practice with a focus on creating general wealth. And what I loved hearing was his whole backstory from the time he was a teenager all the way up to present moment. And he is somebody who I would say is super resilient and determined. And he, no matter what challenges he faced, and no matter where he was emotionally and mentally, he always figured a way out and came out better for it. So he really learned lessons and applied the lessons he learned. And he struggled for, he had a failed marriage, three children from that marriage, and then found his true love and remarried and had three more kids. So he has six kids. He's a great dad, so much so that he had an accident playing on the slip and slide. So a great dad, but he has 20 years in the IT industry as a business executive, and he has extensive experience in sales and marketing, having closed over $30 million in sales in a single year. So in addition to Profit with Law, he also owns an accounting practice, Dream Builder Financial, where he helps clients with business advisory and tax strategy services. So as a college dropout, he eventually got his master's, but it's a fascinating story. And I love him so much. He is in a business mastermind that I'm in, but I really didn't know his full backstory until this interview. And I think you'll love it as much as I did. So enjoy, and let's get to it now.